You should reconsider. Dixon won't enjoy what we've got in mind. Why would I trust you? I'll walk in and you'll shoot me in the head. I agree, it's a risk. But I think you'll take it, because you're responsible for your people's situation. You let them down. You're their leader and you screwed up. I've heard a lot about you. In fact, I'm sick of hearing your name. You'll do what it takes to help them.
Where are you?
Reacher asked. Oh, I'm sure you know.
Reacher glanced ahead through the windshield, factored in the effect of the window tint, and tried to judge the light.
We're 2 hours away,
he said, with a little tension in his voice.
Where are you?
We're south of Palmdale.
Why?
We were going to visit with Dean, to piece it all together the same way Swan did.
Turn around, Lamazon said, right now.
For Miss Dixon's sake.
I bet she's a screamer.
My guys will be all over her. I'll put her on the phone and let you listen.
Reacher paused.
2 hours, he said. We'll talk again.
He clicked off and dialed Nagley.
We go in 60 minutes, he said.
Then he leaned back in his seat and closed his eyes. 60 minutes later, the sky in the east was a dark navy blue, almost black. Visibility was fading fast. Years before, a pedantic schoolteacher in the Pacific somewhere had explained to Reacher that first comes twilight, and then comes dusk, and then comes night. She had insisted that twilight and dusk were not the same thing. If he needed a generic word for evening darkness, he was to use gloaming. Gloaming was what he had right then. Plenty of it, but not quite as much as he would have liked. He dialed Nagley and clicked off after one ring. Her window dropped and she waved, a small, pale hand in the darkness. He started his car and eased away from the curb. No lights. He headed east toward the arriving night and made a right, and 3 blocks later he was skirting New Age's fence, clockwise, along the back line of their property. He made another right and came down the side of their lot and coasted to a stop against the curb about 2/3 of the way down. If New Age's place was a clock, he was stopped on the 4. If it was a compass, he was a little ways south of east. He got out and stood still and listened. Heard nothing. Saw nothing. Highland Park was a populated area, but New Age's place was part of a commercial zone. The workday was over. People were gone. The streets were dark and quiet. He opened the Prelude's trunk, used his fist to smash the courtesy light, used his thumbnail to slit the plastic around the Evian bottles. He took one out and unscrewed the top and took a long drink. Then he poured the rest of the water away in the gutter, stood the empty bottle upright in the trunk. He repeated the process 11 more times, ended up with a neat line of 12 empty 1-liter bottles. Then he took out the gas can. 5 gallons, U.S. liquid measure, which added up to close to 19 liters. He filled the bottles very carefully. The benzene fragrance of unleaded gasoline came up at him. He liked it. It was one of the world's great smells. When the 12th bottle was full, he put the can on the ground. 7 liters still in it, almost 2 gallons. He tore open the bag of polishing rags. They were foot-square pieces of white cotton jersey, like undershirts. He rolled them tight like cigars and eased them down into the necks of the bottles, half in, half out. The gasoline soaked upward, pale and colorless. Molotov cocktails, a crude but effective weapon, invented by fascists during the Spanish Civil War, named by Finns during their struggle against the Red Army in 1939, as a taunt toward the Soviet Foreign Minister Vyacheslav Molotov. I never knew a tank could burn so long,
a Finnish veteran had once recalled. Tanks, buildings, it was all the same to Reacher. He rolled a 13th rag and laid it on the ground, dripped gas from the can on it until it was soaked. He found the box of wooden kitchen matches and jammed them in his pocket, lifted the 12 bottles of gas out of the trunk, one by one, carefully, and stood them upright on the road, 6 feet behind the Prelude's rear bumper. Then he picked up the 13th rag and closed the trunk lid and trapped the rag in it 3/4 out. In the darkness, it looked like the car had a tiny white tail, like a silver lamb. Showtime, he thought. He struck a match and held it against the rag trapped in the trunk lid until the rag was burning bright. Then he flicked the match away and picked up the first Molotov cocktail, lit its wick off the burning rag, and stepped back and hurled it high in the air over the fence. It tumbled through a lazy, blazing arc and burst against the base of the main buildings and wall. Gas exploded and flared and then settled into a small burning pool. He threw the second bomb, same procedure. He lit the wick off the burning rag, stepped back and threw hard. The bottle sailed through the same arc and hit the same place and burst. There was a brief, white-hot flare, and then the pool of flames settled and spread wider. They started to lick upward against the siding. He threw the third bomb directly into the fire, and the fourth. He aimed the fifth a little to the left. It started a brand new fire. He followed it with the sixth and the seventh. His shoulders started to ache from the effort of the giant throws. The grass all around the building's end walls started to burn. Smoke started to drift. He threw the eighth bottle into the gap between the two fires. It fell short and burst and set fire to the grass about 8 feet out. Now there was a large, irregular patch of flames, maybe 10 feet wide, maybe 8 feet deep, maybe 4 feet high, red and orange and green with chemical acceleration. He threw the ninth bottle harder and farther to the left. It exploded near the building's door. The 10th bottle followed it. It didn't burst. It rolled and leaked, and burning gasoline welled out and flames raced and crackled through the dry grass. He paused and picked his spot and used the 11th bottle to fill the gap on the building's corner. The 12th and last bottle followed it. He heaved it hard, and it hit the siding high up and burst into flames, and burning gas spattered the whole end wall. He opened the trunk lid and knocked the burning rag out and stamped on it. Then he stepped to the fence and peered through. The grass at the base of the building's end wall and all along the front wall as far as the door was burning fiercely. Flames were leaping high, and smoke was pouring upward. The building itself was built of metal and was resisting, but it would be getting warm inside. Soon be getting warmer, Reacher thought. He screwed the lid on the gas can and wound up and hurled it like a discus thrower. It soared up over the fence and spun and wobbled through the air and landed dead center in the flames. Thin, red, flammable plastic, 2 gallons of gas inside. There was a split second's pause, and then the can exploded in a huge white fireball. For a time, it looked like the whole place was on fire. And when the fireball eventually died, the flames left behind were twice as high as before, and the paint on the siding was starting to burn. Reacher got back in the Prelude and started up and pulled a ragged U-turn and headed back the way he had come. The muffler burbled. He hoped Dixon and O'Donnell could hear it, wherever they were. 3 blocks later, he was back where he started. He pulled in behind Negley's Civic and killed his motor and sat still and watched out his window. He could see the glow in the distance far to his left, clouds of billowing smoke drifting, uplit by bright leaping flames below. A decent blaze, getting worse by the minute. Impressive. He raised an imaginary glass to Comrade Molotov. Then he leaned back in his seat and waited for the fire department to show up. Chapter 73. The fire department showed up inside 4 minutes. Clearly, New Age had an alarm system hardwired straight into the precinct house. A Pentagon requirement, Reacher guessed, like the guard shack at the gate. Far to his right in the distance, he heard the faint bass bark of sirens and saw blue lights flashing on the horizon. He saw Nagley start her car and put it in gear. He started his own, and then he waited. The sirens grew louder. They changed to a manic, continuous shriek once, then again at busy intersections. Then they died back to random barking. The blue lights got brighter. The trucks were two blocks away. Headlight beams were bright in the gloom. Nagley eased off the curb. Reacher followed her. She drove ahead and waited on the stop line. Reacher was right behind her. The fire trucks were a block away, bearing down, coming on fast, honking and flashing. Nagley swooped out and made the left, right in front of the convoy. Reacher followed her, tires chirping, just yards in front of the leading truck. Its siren blared at him angrily. Nagley drove a couple of hundred yards, one block, two, onto New Age's block. She followed the fence along the front of the property. Reacher was behind her all the way. The sirens behind him were yelping furiously. Then Nagley pulled over like a good citizen. Reacher tucked in behind her. The trucks lurched left and roared past them both. Then more or less immediately they braked hard and turned and headed for New Age's gate. There were three of them. A whole engine company. A priority client. New Age's gate was rolling back, because a fire alarm was better than any kind of pass or paperwork. Then Nagley slammed her car 20 feet into a side street and was out of her seat and running hard through the darkness. Reacher followed her all the way. They crossed the road at maximum speed and caught up with the last truck as it slowed to turn in. They stayed on its left, on the blind side, away from the guard shack, away from the fire, away from the center of attention. They ran hard to keep pace. They tracked the truck all the way in through the gate. Its siren was still sounding. Its engine was roaring. It was deafening. Smoke was drifting from the fire, sharp and acrid on the night air. The truck roared straight ahead. Nagley turned a hard left and ran down the inside face of the fence. Reacher headed half left through the grass. He gave it 10 long seconds of maximum effort and then flung himself down and rolled and crammed himself flat on his front with his face hard down in the dirt. A minute later, he raised his head. He was 60 yards from the fire. Between him and it were the three trucks, huge, noisy, blue lights flashing, headlights blazing. Beyond the trucks, he could see flames. He could see people moving around. New Age security. They were over by the far fence, trying to see who or what had started the fire. They were darting forward and dropping back, beaten by the heat. Firemen were running everywhere, hauling equipment, unrolling hoses. Chaos. Reacher turned his head and strained hard to see through the darkness. Saw a flat, humped shape in the grass, 40 feet away that had to be Nagley. They were inside the fence, undetected. It took 8 minutes for L.A.'s bravest to put out the fire. Then they spent another 31 dousing the ashes and taking notes and following up in one way or another. Total duration of their visit? 39 minutes. Reacher spent the first 20 of them surveying the buildings from as close as he dared to get. Then he spent the final 19 crawling backward as far as he could go. By the time the trucks finished up and rolled out the gate, he was jammed up in the far back corner of the property, 150 yards from the action. The closest thing to him was the helicopter. It was still standing on its pad about halfway along the lot's diagonal, maybe 70 yards away. Beyond it was the closest of the small outbuildings, the pilot's office, Reacher guessed. He had seen a guy in a leather jacket run out the door. Behind him, in a blaze of light, he had seen charts and maps pinned on a wall. Equidistant from the helicopter and the pilot's office, and 30 yards south of both, was the parking lot. It was full of the 6 blue Chryslers, full of them, cold and quiet. Beyond the pilot's office was the second small outbuilding, a storeroom of some kind, Reacher guessed. The fire chief had been allowed to take a fast look inside. Then came the main building, the hub of the operation, the assembly line, where women in shower caps labored over laboratory benches. All around it, people were still out in the open and moving around. Reacher was pretty sure he recognized Lamazon by his size and his shape, stamping around in the last of the smoke, yelling orders, directing operations. Lennox and Parker were there too, plus others, hard to say how many. Too much darkness and confusion and milling about. Three at least, maybe four, or even five. The third small outbuilding was set far back, away from everything else, toward the corner directly opposite Reacher's. Its door had not opened at any point, and nobody had gone anywhere near it. Not Lamazon or his people, not the firefighters. That was the prison, Reacher guessed.